following episode of Dave's Video Graveyard contains spoilers and naughty words. Listener discretion is advised.
Have you ever bought or rented a videotape that wasn't quite right? It may have been
Dave's Video Graveyard. Of all the film podcasts in the world, this is definitely one of them. Covering the best of the worst and the worst of the best of all things film. This is Dave's Video Graveyard with Casey and Dave.
This is Dave's Video Graveyard. Casey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm pumped.
We are back in the... We always set out to do it, and we're kind of... I don't want to brag or like blow our own horn, but we kind of are tipping the scales of becoming the known for nostalgia show.
Like,
we are so tragic in it on our own that everyone's getting in on it. And I noticed this happen. Like, I used to, like, with collecting Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
I did it for a long time, and it was almost like a secret, like a bit of a shame thing. And as soon as it was out there, everyone jumped on board. And so, like, nearly weekly, someone's like, I found this. And now that we're on the nostalgia train, driving it just blindly,
yep,
because it's what keeps us sane as humans, it's amazing how many people jump in on board. And this episode is going to be an absolute nostalgia member berries episode.
Yep.
So we are talking all about Aussie TV classics. Now, I must apologize because we did get a lot of input through social media, but it was all from older people than us. We are in our mid-30s.
Yeah.
So many shows come through and I'd look it up.
I don't know what that is.
And one thing that came through during the week, someone mentioned the show Boney. Now, I don't know if you remember
that.
It was one of the Pedersen brothers, so not Aaron from Gladiators. It was one of the other Pedersens, I reckon. And it was about an Aboriginal that had grown up living on a mission, and he'd become like a super detective. And so I remember watching it in, like, you know, the mid to late 90s. And when I looked it up, it's actually an Aussie show that got remade. It's from the 70s.
Oh.
And he was, it was also, obviously, an Aboriginal becomes a... basically becomes PJ from Blue Heelers. And I've got to say, looking at the 72 one, I don't know enough about it, but I'm like, oh, this is definitely weird territory because it it looked very stereotypical in a lot of portrayals, but I don't know. So we won't be touching on that. But when we're doing our research this week, you realize that Australia kind of, we've always been kind of the meat and veg consumer, particularly growing up. So we kind of had all these categories that fit the shows that we loved.
I think so. It's sort of, there's definitely a few puzzle pieces that hold the whole thing together. Where we had, you know, the 80s and 90s had a golden era of sketch comedy and a lot of spin-offs of characters from sketch comedy being the basis of the comedy shows that we remember.
Yep.
But there was also a lot of drama, a lot of cop, I'll call it cops, but, you know, like water cops, air cops, but all that sort of thing. Lots of game shows. ABC Kids, and then lots of kids' game shows. But also we had a lot of what I'd call lifestyle programs.
Yes, yes. We were the country that were obsessed with Women's Weekly. What was trendy to cook, what was trendy. I'm sure it's responsible for every salmon pink house that was painted in the early 90s.
But it's all very, all your sections of a magazine. So the Better Homes and Gardens-esque kind of variety hour that all your parents made you sit through. So your cheap, quick home renos, your garden shows, your cooking recipes, all that was really the core of the TV in the 80s and 90s, I feel like.
Because, you know, we had the things like Better Homes and Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Which
Better
to me,
Homes Than Yours, I like to call
it. It had such nostalgia for me because it was hosted by Noni Hazelhurst,
yep,
who we know she grew up hosting Play School and she was everyone's favourite. She was so lovely and nice. Mm-hmm. And her husband at the time, John Jarrett, who went on to be...
Was that her husband?
That was her husband.
Wow.
Went on to be old Uncle Mick from the Wolf Creek
movies.
Yeah,
that is Aussie-ass.
How Aussie is it that we grew up with John Jarrett pretty much, you know, teaching us how to fix our house?
Yep.
Here's how you paint your fence out the front. And he went on to be
a well-known bush
murderer in a movie series. That sums up to me the way Australian pop culture goes.
Have you ever gone back and looked at some of those, like, Huey's Cooking Adventures recipes?
I certainly have. What I love was this one's healthy, so we're going to swap butter with
margarine.
Just straight up olive oil.
Yeah. But the recipes are like, we're cooking today deviled sausages with mash, and it's not really a recipe.
Or it would be like
lamb shanks.
Curried sausages with pineapple rings like pinned to it. That's the way Aussie cooking was. It's so disgusting, but we can't talk too much bad about Women's Weekly and stuff, because that is where the peak of all birthday cakes were from, was the Women's Weekly Kids
book.
Birthday Cake book. What an amazing thing. I loved when we posted about it on social media. Ben from Toy Power Podcast actually posted a photo of him as a
that
kid.
Was amazing,
that was
amazing.
That
was
so great. So shout out to that. So, yeah, we've had so many. We're not even kind of. Australia kind of became that, all right, we're going to follow America, but about 4 years behind. Like, we'll be a few steps behind.
Yeah, we got the 80s in 1991.
Yeah, pretty much. So we were, America was the cool big cousin, and Australia was like, oh, let's do what they're doing. And so we got a lot
of
trends.
Let's make our own MTV, but it's video hits.
And I do like, for as much as, you know, they said, you know, the global village and all these things were coming and we were going to become like this big cultural thing. Which obviously did happen, but it happened a lot quicker and a lot broader than we realized. It's so funny how Australia still managed to keep a sense of identity with some of our most terrible shows.
Some of it is like it didn't come out in the wash. Some of the Australia, the stain of it being Australian just stayed, and I love it.
And, you know, we do an episode saying how much confessing our undying love for Hey Hey It's Saturday, and Daryl goes and gets all guns blazing. Like, could you wait maybe 6 months till we're not getting any more downloads for that episode? Come
so
on, Daryl. But anyway,
we
did say that it was problematic and it would never get made again. We actually turned Chris Fresh's mind around. That's how, you know, that's how safe.
That's how
asterisk. Of not getting cancelled for it. So one of the other things that died in the late 80s and in Australia was police procedurals.
Yes.
But I think it wasn't so much they died in Australia. We're all just so obsessed with the bill that we didn't bother making our own.
We stopped watching our own.
But funnily enough, in 1994, Australia threw its hat into the ring and we started a police procedural.
The other John Howard.
The other John Howard. We got to have one of the... one of the coolest and longest running police shows on Australian TV, and let's hear a little bit from it.
It's an awfully long theme tune.
Sergeant Croydon, you got to get down the Imperial and pay your bloody tab. You're there
your
drinking.
Bar tab, mate.
So in 1994, the world said hello to Blue Heelers. It was an Aussie police drama made by the Southern Star Group, which just watching the trailer earlier, that Southern Star thing, when that came up, I was like, oh, we're already in member buried territory. It was set in the fictional Victorian town, Mount Thomas. It ran from 1994 to 2006. One thing this evening that's really going to blow my mind is how long some of these shows
ran.
Yeah,
I can't believe that went for that long.
And I think it's always been difficult with Aussie shows because you have your initial run. Because now with reality shows, they show it once and then the week later they play the like encore episode.
Yeah, and then they have a panel discussing that exact show another show. Yeah.
But back then, what we got was we need to fill the 11 a.m. to 1 o'clock on days that we don't have a midday movie starring Steve Guttenberg.
So you get the whole week's worth of episodes.
You would get
or whatever.
All these episodes. So I reckon that ran till probably this today. If you could change through free-to-air TV, I'm sure you would find Blue Heelers somewhere.
I reckon you probably would.
So it was really funny because it ran for so long and it was such a juggernaut that it kind of just kept winning. In Australia, there's the equivalent of like the Emmys called the Logies.
I like to call it the Who's That of television.
Very nice. And it won. It equaled the Don Lane Show, which I have no idea what that is because I'm 35.
I think it's like a Tonight Show.
It sounds like a Graham Kennedy-esque type thing.
Yeah, in Melbourne Tonight.
Yeah. So it won equal amount of... Logies, but overall it's the highest award winning show in Australian TV history.
Wow.
And for me, the best character was PJ. We followed his adventures as he was originally a plainclothes cop, then he became a detective. And it was just a progression of how much hair Martin Sachs could lose month to month. And it was quite interesting. And the character known as Nick, he got shot in one of the earlier series.
Yeah.
He was recently in that Guns Akimbo movie
with Daniel Harry Potter. Radcliffe. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, that's Nick. Everybody, it's Nick. And we also had the Declan from Heartbreak High.
Yeah.
Ended up being one of the young cops. Lisa McEwen. We were just talking before we started. Where is she now?
And like, I said honestly, she's doing Coles ads.
And John Woods, big
Not
old
John
Sergeant
Howard,
Croydon.
Which I said before.
Sergeant Croydon himself is trying to sell us industry super funds.
And then Tasma Walton, Mrs. Rove.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Martin Sachs looks like Australia's version of Detective Stabler from SVU. Yeah.
Well, you were saying this is the
the Aussie Law and Order.
The Aussie Law and Order.
Or like just NYPD Blue Heelers.
But what I loved was, because it was set in, set in a small town. So you'd get like, much like Heartbeat or, it was Aussie Heartbeat, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd get your week-to-week procedurals and it was always like, oh, this week, these guys are burning down other people's paddocks.
Yep.
And the following week, it's like, this guy's building a nuclear bomb in his shed. It's like, oh, take it. And, you know, because this was the be-all, end-all, it did spawn a lot of copycats.
Mm.
You got, like, water rats.
Yes.
Stingers. You were running
stingers.
Through some
I
of
was
the ones.
Running through them. There was a whole sort of, like, style of show. Water rats, blue heelers, sea change was another one. Police rescue.
Which was Lisa McEwen.
Yeah, police rescue. Anything with Rebecca Gibney in it. All Saints, even, to
All
a lesser
Saints,
degree.
Yeah, to a lesser degree. That was Aussie Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, yep.
We do get
G'day's Anatomy.
That's beautiful. We do get our own, like, cover songs of all these big popular songs in the TVs that we watch because something does it big in the US and we get our
and
own
And then we
version.
Get our own sort of... Have we created any shows? Oh, well, Kath and Kim we came up with and then they copied it in America.
Wilfred as well.
Oh, yeah, Wilfred.
Which I love that they didn't recast Wilfred. So essentially it was just a super long series where they recast the human he lived with. Lisa McEwen, I'm having a look at what she's doing now.
She's in that The Last PM or whatever that show is. It's the last thing I've ever heard of.
She was in an Aussie show in 2002 called Martial Law.
Oh, gosh.
Which sounds amazing. She's doing a lot of stage shows, which is what, like, the Matt Days of the world, all the Aussie actors that no longer get TV work, decide that they're...
Oh, yeah, Body Melt. She was in Body Melt.
Oh, what a movie. That's got half the cast of... Blue Heelers.
Yeah.
That's a high recommend for anyone listening.
That is, if you feel like being grossed out and confused, watch that movie.
She was in a show called Rake, which was made for ABC.
That, yeah.
I never saw it because Richard Roxburgh's face just irks me to no degree. I recently watched and loved the movie Swinging Safari from the director and writer of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Oh, yeah.
Loved the whole thing. Got
oh,
to the
you
end.
You told me to watch that. Yeah.
You will love it. Realized who the voice was narrating it because it was Richard Roxburgh. And I was like, oh, that ruins the whole movie for me. He's just one of those people. So, yeah, Blue Heelers.
I've looked up Martin Sachs and he has not done anything different. He's been since in Wentworth and Underbelly.
So he's always been
a cop. It's always been a cop show.
He's like the Ernie Hudson is. One thing I wanted to talk about tonight. Would it be safe to say, I was trying to think, who is an American actor that bounced from sitcom to sitcom and never really failed, was always successful? Ted Danson was the best example I could come up with.
Yeah, actually, that's a good
example. And the reason
example.
I ask is because I wanted a good way to describe anyone that doesn't know who Glenn Robbins is.
Oh, okay.
Because he just kept reinventing himself.
Yep.
And still to this day.
Kicking goals every
kicks
time.
Kicks goals and quite often is the funniest part of anything he works on.
Yeah.
Because he started
that's
as
fair.
Uncle Arthur on the comedy company and it just moved through and through and through. So, yeah, Blue Heelers was the
Russell
first
Coit.
Show. Yeah, Russell Coit, Kath and Kim, obviously. Yeah.
I feel like Kath and Kim is a show that I absolutely love, but that you probably hate.
I've never watched it.
You've never watched it?
Because, like we've spoke about, and it's quite often a line to draw in the sand, I feel like the girls from Big Girls Blowers wrote, much like Little Britain, wrote 10 characters.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And that's their whole career is just revisiting versions of those characters.
I think unlike Little Britain, those characters can be put in so many scenarios that we've seen play out in our everyday lives, that the intricacies of what make that character so Australian is because we've all got that same auntie or we've all had a teacher like that, and it's so familiar that it's just hilarious. I don't know. It's just, yeah, the Little Britain characters are a bit more two-dimensional than...
Yeah, I definitely get it, and I wonder how much of that's a cultural thing where we get those little Aussie idioms that are with, like,
Big Girls Wales and Kath and Kim. Yeah, it's the sayings and the way that they... Yeah, I don't know.
Because if any Aussie watches Kath and Kim, because the few episodes I've had watched, that reminds me of this teacher or that reminds me of this auntie. Like, it's got, like, a broad net has been cast and it still gets, like, little real good, like, little bits.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So the next thing we wanted to cover was going over to SBS, which was Sex Before Soccer.
Oh, yeah.
Was what it was known as at the time. Yellow subtitles still warm my heart because
SBS
of this channel.
In the 90s made me who I am today.
100%. Yeah. And especially this show. It was the naughty show to watch, but we're going to hear all about Eat Carpet. Eat Carpet was an Aussie TV series on SBS that ran from 1989 all the way up into 2005. It premiered alongside MCTV and The Noise, which were both, remember they were compilations of like Aussie hip-hop and stuff. It was,
yeah,
it was like
MCTV,
a Rage, but
yeah.
It wasn't, the acts weren't quite high enough up to make it onto Rage. So each hour-long episode consisted of up to a dozen short films, done by amateur directors from all over the world and film students. It was, some of the shorts went for 2 minutes, some went for 25.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, there was lots of nudity.
Loved it.
It was very
dirty. It was always,
dirty.
You know, as a young, you know, degenerate like myself, always guaranteed something good. But I feel like I used to put that, because I had a TV in my bedroom growing up as a kid, and I'd watch that sort of thing late at night or if I woke up early, because it was on before Rage, I feel like, sometimes. It was so surreal a lot of the time watching those movies, and they might have been in a different language or they were claymation or they were art house, and there was always something so different about each one. That's a thrill that I'm forever chasing, is that weirdness of just...
100%. Yeah. It felt like the Wild West, because you could watch something that was ready to go onto primetime TV.
Yep.
Or you could watch something where you're like, is this illegal to watch? Like, you know what I mean? It felt so...
Just bizarre things, funny things, I don't know, all of it. And still to this day, if I can't sleep, I'll find Eat Carpet episodes on YouTube. Or my fallback is just Googling Tropfest.
I remember there was an episode of Eat Carpet and it made me feel so yuck because of the sound design. But the whole episode was shot in reverse.
Oh.
But they were like Twin Peaks. They were saying all their lines forwards.
Yeah, there's something real creepy about that.
And the sound of all, like, the cars driving past, the sound going backwards.
Yeah.
It really made me feel ill at the time.
Especially because you're a kid, so you haven't seen enough weird things like that. And it's like the middle of the night and you're usually alone and it's just a combination of things. But there's something exciting about that. That I'm always still sort of recreating that in my own life.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from. And if you wonder why Aussie kids are tormented and weird, look at the television we watch.
Now, if nobody's heard of the show Mully Grubs, I want you to right now get out your phone, Google the word Mully Grubs. It'll come up. It's just a face on like a green screen that is so terrifying. No one has ever forgotten it after they've seen it.
No. Mully Grubs was an Aussie TV series. It aired on Channel 10 from 1988 until 1996. And... honestly, how did it last that long? Because it was so terrifying.
So stupid.
We've spoken before. The Mully Grubs face was so terrifying, as was the bookworm from the book place.
Yeah, yep.
Like we
both
had,
South Australian. So, like, what is in the water here?
Yeah, we had so many terrifying children. Just come on, kids, with Marty the Monster, which was terrible.
I could make so many.
I know. What an unfortunate name for a kid show.
Do you know what Mully Grubs means?
No.
It's like down in the dumps, like you're the sad sack kind of thing. Yeah,
I thought it might have actually been like a witchetty grub kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds like a grub, but it just means like, oh, you've got the Mully Grubs, like, which is really depressing.
Over that time, there was 550 episodes made, and 425
costing a total budget of $10.
$10. And that was like the old paper money. Yeah. 425 are being stored intact in the National Film and Sound Archive of Australia. So that building needs to be burned down.
We're going to need to go there later on and learn
And the show is best remembered, like you said, for a face that made up of just eyes, eyebrows, nostrils and a mouth blue screen, yeah. which appeared occasionally during the program. And the actress who played the part of the face was Diana Kidd.
You can see her face if you Google it. A BuzzFeed thing showed what her face looked like. I always thought it looked a bit like Kylie Minogue, though.
Really?
I don't know if that's just me.
It's because Kylie Minogue has that real nostril nose. Mm.
But they've pitched the voice of the Mully Grub so that it's like quite a few keys higher, but with that computer stretched sound of it having been changed. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's got the distortion to it. Where
that
it's like,
weird, it's not unnatural a clean, sound.
The pitch and the time's a little bit off, so it's kind of distorted. Now, while we're on the subject of kid shows...
That freaked you out.
Yeah, there was another one that you sent me a whole heap of stuff about, and I just remembered the visuals, but I didn't necessarily remember the show. It's a show called Pick Your Face.
Yes.
So let's hear the theme and see if it jogs anyone's memory.
Pick your face. Come on, pick your face. Crinkles and wrinkles, smiles or frowns, long or red or black or brown, piggy eyes or droopy lids, juicy pimples and volcanic zits.
Pick your face.
Pick your face. Cauliflower ears and noses and drip. Double chins and silicone lips. Let's play Pick Your Face.
That sounds absolutely terrifying.
That digital sound effect. I love it. This is the future.
So Pick Your Face was created by Banksia Productions, and Banksia Productions are from Adelaide, South Australia.
They sure are.
Presented by Angus Smallwood, which is also an unfortunate name for a kid show. It was a children's game show. What do you remember about this one?
I remember watching it a lot because for some reason, I don't know why the 90s were so prolific with kids' game shows, but they just were. There were just so many of them.
With the peak being Amazing.
Amazing was absolutely the top tier game show for kids, but this was like a, I don't know, it just wasn't very good. But I think because I liked gross out humor, it appealed to me because it was like a lot of big noses that you had to pull boogies out of until you found like
and
the
there
clues.
Were clues that would tell your faces
and like zits you had to pop to get the zits off the screen to reveal the photo, and then the whole thing was putting together these faces or getting the thing off to solve who it was.
So it was made in 1999, ran until 2003. It leaned very heavily into that Nickelodeon guts style, where it was like
double
slime
dare,
and goo and everything's
style.
Yucky. Mm. Not for your parents, basically.
But so it was trying too hard to be edgy, like, you know, Odd Bods, how they had all those super gross drawings. Yeah, it was a lot of that.
So just looking through the makeup of the show, round one, contestants had to remove items that served as clues from a large fake nose, which when gathered together would make the name of a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
So round two, player would come into the studio and play a game where they had four celebrity faces with the eyes, nose and mouth of each cut out and posted randomly around the outside of the board. The object was to basically puzzle them back together and guess the celebrity, your celebrity, successfully. Round three, each player looked at their own photo as it slowly transformed into the face of a celebrity. I remember this well because they used to use the exact same technology as they used on the news whenever someone committed a crime and they couldn't show their face. It was that pixelated circle that was all squares that were blurry.
But it was also the same kind of technology, but really Australian crude 90s bad version of. You know the end of the Michael Jackson Black or White video where all the faces turn to a different one? It was that. So it would slowly be your face turning into like Steve Buscemi, and you had to pause it at a certain point and say who it was actually turning into.
Amazing. Round four, they had a photograph of a celebrity, which was a cartoon with grotesque features superimposed, and they responded to yes or no questions, which would remove the creepy faces. So I remember it would be John Travolta's face with like a massive weird nose
and
like googly
Austin
glass.
Powers teeth and all this. Yeah.
And they'd slowly round it. Then there was a lot of trivia, and it got picked up by the Disney Channel in 2005 and ran until 2009. So there was obviously some life in the idea if it got picked up by Disney.
Now I want to list off a couple of kids' game shows and see if you remember them. Do you remember Vidiot?
I certainly do remember Vidiot. It was one of the greatest shows of all time. I think it also informed my terrible sense of humor because it was a lot of puns.
Yeah.
A lot of the questions were like, you had to guess the song title, and one of the songs was like, "The Honeymoon Is Over." And so the lady's there with a moon and she's pouring honey under it.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, no, it's over, and pours it over. And I was like, wow, what an incredible clue.
Do you remember the show Challenger?
You sent me photos of this. I couldn't find anything online for it.
It was the guy who was known as Dougie the Pizza Guy, that Diamond whatever. It looked like he turned up half cut or stoned for everything, and he like didn't know the answers to the questions he was asking the kids. And it was, an Alpha and Omega team that were two different schools competing against each other. What about Now You See It? Do you remember that one?
Now You See It. I know the name.
It's almost like a digital finder word that was on the screen and you had to like buzz in and say the words you could see.
Yes, I did remember that one. It was like the more boring parts of Amazing, you know, where they had to like step on the keyboard. Yeah. A lot of that
the
kind
literacy
of stuff.
Part.
Yeah. It was like Countdown for kids.
What about Total Recall? Do you remember that one?
Total Recall? No.
It was a memory game.
Was it hosted by Schwarzenegger?
No.
That would have been incredible if it was a tie into the film.
Now, do you remember as well, it's not a kid's one, but video-esque. Do you remember when John Burgess left Wheel of Fortune and had Burjo's catchphrase?
And he got rid of his moustache.
Yes.
Yes, I do remember.
And it was the worst puns. It was kind of a little bit wrong and people were guessing them. And it would be like, cats have 9 lives, which isn't even a catchphrase. It would be something like that.
Yeah.
And it would show some cats in a cartoon and you had to guess the thing to get this square off of it. And everyone would be going, is it Cats in the Cradle?
Yes.
And they were always like so far from the mark. Is it the Josie and the Pussycats? None of those are sayings. Can you please try harder?
And it would be like, you know, two birds or one in the bush, whatever that saying is. And they'd be buzzing in going, 4 and 20 blackbirds.
Yes.
4 and 20 blackbirds.
It's
and it was animated.
Animated.
It just had
real
one
bad
movement.
Yep.
And it would move. Oh, Burjo's catchphrase. What a terrible show.
And by the end, it was like spoon feeding you like a person with the word like, you know, worry and with a cross through it and then a B with the word happy on it. And it would be, and that was like, you know, don't worry, be happy.
And I do remember that show was terrible.
Real bad.
And the animation was done by the same person that did. Remember the Australian version of The Price is Right? And it had that one bit of the guy walking up the stairs.
Yeah, I've drawn that
then
before.
Then he falls over the edge. It's the same style of animation.
I've got that illustration on my page. I loved Price is Right. I thought the novelty factor was right there for me as a kid.
Now, a friend of the show that is from the Cara from Cruising for Reviews and Podcasts, she told the story that she organized with one of her teachers to submit her school for Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were successful in their application. They got through and everything. And they didn't send Cara. They sent 3 other kids.
Heartbreaking.
When she told that story, I was so upset for her because peak of... I still play Bubsy just in case
just
I get the call up.
For that, yep.
I'm waiting for James to call me and be like, it's time to do Amazing. And I'll be like, Nothing united the world more, particularly the Australian audience, of yelling at kids that missed the key on the back of the door
I
and
know.
Amazing.
There's an episode that's still on YouTube that you can watch. Me and my brother have watched it so many times. And there's a bit where the kid misses, plain as day, the letter. And my brother just loses his shit every time. And, yeah, it's frustrating, especially the video game section when it's like, a real easy game, and they're
like,
just
they'd
not
play
good
Nat
at it.
Attack from Mario Paint,
yeah, they
and they'd
really
be terrible at it.
Wow, that's a flashback.
It is. Now, speaking of flashbacks, it's time to hear the most nightmare fueled. Well, one of the two most nightmare fueled shows we'll be talking about this evening. We are talking all about Plasmo. It was made in 1989 and then 13 5-minute episodes were made in 1996. It was aired between a lot of stuff on the ABC.
Just those 5-minute like Trapdoor
kind of Trapdoor or Gogs, all those shows, which were much better. The thing I remember about Plasmo, it was just so unsettling.
It was creepy. It's
a corridor
uncanny
looked like a
valley.
Vagina.
Yeah, it really did.
It was so
a total
bizarre.
Vagina.
And I remember Plasmo had the little dog called Nick Nick, and all it could say would Nick Nick, and it was just the weirdest show ever. It was so absurd that now we probably wouldn't even blink. It'd be totally normal. Like you watch Hey Gabba Gabba or Yo Gabba Gabba and stuff like that. Like and they're that, all weird in the Night Garden style stuff.
Yes.
But at the time it was groundbreaking in how creepy it was.
The first time I ever saw this was actually at the video store and I walked past it in the kids' aisle and saw it and was like, what is that?
I always laughed because the voice of Corridor, I always thought it was Bruce Spence because it looked like Bruce Spence. Do you know who Bruce Spence is?
I don't know.
I'll bring him up on the computer. but it looked to me like Bruce Spence for so much of it. This guy. Oh, that screen's not...
Hang on.
The Aussie actor. He was in Mad Max too and stuff. And it's what it sounded like. He was also in a kid's show called Halfway Across the Galaxy and Turn Left. Do you remember that one?
The name is really familiar.
It was about a family of aliens that came to like Australia to live and blend in. But they were being chased by... And Bruce Spence's character had like a like almost a Nazi uniform, but he had a yellow... A red visor over his eye that let him see the aliens. And he was trying to find this family. And they were trying to blend in and go to school and be normal and stuff, but everything was foreign, almost like a third rock from the sun type thing.
Yeah, it sounds just
And I'm pretty sure it was one of those things that it aired on the ABC, but they never resolved the story. Like they just second season stopped showing it, and it was like, oh, what happened to the show? So that was one that was also really creepy, and the most creepy, which people still bring up all the time to us.
Oh yeah,
we are talking all about Liftoff. We are talking about Liftoff, one of the craziest shows of TV.
Amazing.
And we've talked in our original shit show episode about Round the Twist with Mark Mitchell, who was also in the comedy company, is Con the Fruiterer.
Yeah, yep.
He went on to be in Round the Twist, but he was also featured heavily in Liftoff.
Yeah, Liftoff was odd. It was like a bunch of kids and this doll that had no eyes and no mouth and it just moved silently.
AC.
But it also had like backpacks that talked and that lizard that was running around and that plant with an eyeball that would just show you like a weird video.
The elevator used to show you things almost like... This was of the era. Remember when the Life Education Van was super out there? Like you'd go on and it'd be... They'd project... I remember vividly they projected the universe on the roof of it.
The planetarium.
Everyone would go and you had to lie down and it would fly up and like you'd go and watch like, these people don't get free choice. They eat vegetables. And you're that like...
Was that made by a religion or something?
Well, perhaps. I think so because it had that very preachy feel to it. But one thing that I always thought was so funny was... It was very Monty Python-esque because they wanted to reach the kids.
Mm.
But imagine watching that with a couple of like, have a few drinks and watch the Life Education Experience. I think it'd be a bit much now. So Liftoff was produced by ABC in 1992 and it ran until 1995. Each episode featured a live-action storyline about a group of young children and the problems they encountered with growing up, their parents, and various other social issues. So it was very inclusive because one of the lead boys was a little Aboriginal boy.
Mm-hmm.
So it taught a lot about equality and stuff, which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All the episodes would feature a segment of short animation, puppetry, and documentary segments. So almost like they used to have on preschool when they'd go through, play school, sorry, where they'd go through the window.
Through the window.
Like, hello, my name's Stephen and this is my farm. And they'd like show a kid living
or
on
like,
the farm.
You know, in Sesame Street, the old episodes where it would be how they made peanut butter or like a crayon factory and stuff.
It was aimed at 3 to 8 year olds, but I'm pretty sure I watched it much longer than that.
Yeah, same.
And it covered subjects such as jealousy, loneliness, anger. So it was a very, you know, it did the job that essentially Behind the News would do now.
Do you know what? Honestly, now that you're saying that, I do remember that. But had you asked me a minute ago what was that show about, all I would have remembered was that weird doll.
And they did the spin-off show called Wackadoo Cafe, which was much like Vidiot. It was a game show for students from schools. Hosted by Mark Mitchell as well. And it started because Wackadoo was the animated section where one of the backpacks would say, Wackadoo, and it would like go to Wackadoo.
Did they ever make those backpacks as merch to go with that show? Because
the colours of my life. Like, that is
something
my life.
You need.
100%. Yeah, so Liftoff is the final of the Nightmare material that we'll be covering
on this episode. A second ago mentioned BTN.
Yep.
I remember that from school when I was going to school, and they still have it now. Like, it that is one of the longest running things.
It is big business now. Two of my children have been on it. And
wow.
The first time around, they're very nonchalant, and then when they see their friends on it, it's like, yeah. Like,
I know him.
We've all done it. Yeah. We've all had a go. I think it's pretty good because so often my son Ollie's like, oh, did you hear that such and such happened and like the fruit flies are doing this? I'm like, where did you hear that? He's on BTN. And I'm like, when? He goes, oh, we watched it in class.
Mm.
So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
We watched Round the Twist in class, and that's why we turned out to be such well-mannered like adults.
Well, round is the big part of that.
Well, round physically, of course. This is Dave's Video Graveyard, and you've clearly called in sick to school today because we are talking about Ready, Steady, Cook. Casey, you were quite happy to put this one on the list this evening.
I was.
And I think we should specify that as great as we think Colin Lane is, we are talking about the Peter Everett era
of Ready, Steady, that was Cook.
The golden era. It's a four-time Logie Award nominated.
I thought you were going to say nominated.
Australian cookery competition show. It aired on Channel 10 from 2005 till 2013. Repeats continue to air until 2014, so that's only a year. It's based on Ready, Steady, Cook from the UK, and the format is owned by Endemol. They created it, and we bought our own version. And Peter Everett was an amazing host in 2006, a big part of Channel 10's daytime lineup. And like I said, you could not call in sick without watching Ready, Steady, Cook.
And Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. But this movie. This show was such a time because...
this was like...
Peter Everett was a ball of chaos on anything he was on. We've spoken about him when he was on Changing Rooms.
Yes.
He was so flirty and...
Very flirty.
Quite often, a lot of TV hosts learn to roll with the punches no matter how things get. Don't let them get awkward.
Yeah, no, not old mate Peter.
He went the other, like, if something, they teach you in, like, presenting and stuff, if something gets awkward, move away from it, move on. Not Pete. Went and got an oversized novelty magnifying glass and held it over whatever was awkward. And half the time it wasn't even deliberate.
Bring it back up,
Bring it back up. He'd re-apologize or he'd, like... particularly like when we talked about Changing Rooms, Pete would get in an argument with the homeowner and stuff, and they'd say something that he didn't like, and about 20 minutes later he'd think of a comeback. So he'd say it, and it's so like, dude, bring that it was back 20 up just minutes to ago that.
Yep. The jerk's so cold they're running out of you.
Yeah, it really was. But
Ready, Steady, Cook was like, for anybody who doesn't remember it, it was a cheap, very overly lit competitive cooking show where two celebrity chefs, I guess we'll call them in quotes, competed with two members of the audience to come up with a better dish based on a mystery bag that they'd bought from IGA, the sponsor. And it would be like some lamb chops, a thing of like mustard.
And a packet of cashews.
Yeah, and they'd have to come up with a dish out of that. And so, yeah.
I always found it so funny that like... it used to blow my mind because we're not simplifying this. We're not dumbing it down. Yeah, that is exactly what the show was. But everything was voted on by the audience, and you had either your capsican or your tomato.
The other one? The capsican was the green one. Yeah, tomato
green
was red,
capsican or a red tomato, and you had to vote on what you wanted to happen in the show. And one thing that blows my mind still to this day, how did they get so many people there wanting to go and see that live?
They must have been giving away those tickets. Or it must have been the promise that
you might be on the show.
Or it was like the bit before a good one, like Family Feud was on next or something, and you might have been on that or like...
Yeah, good call. Because it's one of those things where like...
The price is
the
right.
The way Aussie shows do, and quite often this is the case all over the world, when it comes to game shows and stuff like that, they'll film 60 of them in 30 days.
Yeah.
Or 90 of them, three episodes a day for 30 days, then that will cover their whole year's programming.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, because Andrew O'Keefe got fired from The Chase and he's still on air because they've still got like half a year banked. One day he's just going to disappear and be taken over by someone else. But that's what it is. They film so much of it like all together and then spread it out.
That's why I was curious why the Masked Singer was still on during the COVID lockdowns, because they'd done that. They'd filmed so much of it that it was able to run for like months before that actually came into effect.
I know when Trent was doing Lego Masters, there were weeks where, like, we're pretty sure he was just sitting at home because he wasn't allowed to be seen because we didn't know, like, the outcome and stuff like that. So it was quite weird.
Ready Steady Cook, the premise of it reminded me of another show that I only just thought of a second ago and I had to bring it up. Do you remember Aristos Surprise Chef? And a dude would
go up to him in the shop?
In the shops and look in their trolley and go home with them and cook, like, probably use up a week's worth of food, cooking, like, one dinner.
I wanted to talk about another classic Aussie show, the McAuliffe program.
Oh, yeah.
It always poked fun of. There used to be an ad campaign in Australia for Nappy Sand where they would approach someone, knock on their door and say, can you wash your quilts in this and see if it turns out whiter? And the Wayne Hope skit was that he'd never use it.
Never used it.
Oh, my nan died. So
Can you come back next week?
Yeah. So with that show, I was always wanting him to go home to a dump.
Yeah, like, cause it was that always, would have been great.
It was always a moderately...
not like they've got all the dishes are in the sink. And
I know,
it was
kind of nice house. And I'm like, well, can we cook at yours instead?
They'd get to my house, the top of the stove's all covered in stuff. There's like cats running around.
Yeah. Ours would be the oven trays, and instead of cleaning, just put another layer of foil.
Oh, we do that all the time. Yeah, he'd be like, how much foil is on this tray? I'd be like, tray, it's all just foil.
It's just
a piece of cardboard covered.
It was originally a piece of baking paper. Yeah. Yeah, Ready Steady Cook. Now, while we were speaking of Ready Steady Cook, it did get taken over in 2011. Colin Lane replaced Everett. Now, Colin had gone split from his comedy partner, not your host. But I think it's time we talk about a time when we did love Colin Lane, because there was a time where he was one of the funniest people on television, and it's time to talk about this show.
I got the feeling, got a bit of an inkling, this is going to be one of those days. This is a show all about me.
And me.
And all the things I do and all the things I see.
And also what I see.
I get the feeling, got a bit of an inkling, as long as we're together, it'll be okay.
We are talking about Leno and Woodley. It was the peak of Aussie skit. This is a time where ABC was still taking chances. Do you remember that era?
Yeah. I remember when it was like almost the Triple J-esque, you know, sort of sketch comedy thing, like Sandman and Flacco and Leno and Woodley and Umbilical Brothers and all those people.
The big
that were
gig,
sort of
Doug Anthony All-Stars.
Yeah, those little guys.
And that's when I always talk, because we love the song about boobs by Mick Feast and Kate Sobrano.
Oh,
and
man.
Kate Fisher.
I was so happy when you reminded me just that El Feast even existed.
Yeah.
McFeast, sorry. But yeah, I like went and looked at all the old stuff.
It was so naughty.
It was very naughty.
I was very informed as a kid by that
show. I loved that. And like McFeast, definitely. And then do you remember Toddy Goldsmith? And there was a show called Sex Life.
I do. She was in that show Fire that we were talking about on the original shit show episode. There was also, there was another kids show. I can't remember what it was called.
Another kids show.
There was a kids show. And one of the hosts was like Toddy Goldsmith, or one of those type like glamour models.
It
was always like, what is she doing on this show? It's so funny. Leno and Woodley was a show with Leno and Woodley as the stars. Consisted of two series which aired on the ABC in 1997 through to 1999. It came out in 2004 on VHS and also on DVD. It is much like, it's essentially the Arnie Donna of its time, because it was like they had all these live acts that they'd written into a series of skits, which became an ongoing story. It had a lot of heart. And I will say, Leno and Woodley, I've showed it to my kids recently, it is timeless comedy. Like,
really?
It stands up because it was just such timeless comedy, like the wardrobe skit, a lot of the slapstick.
It's become something for me that is so overdone that it puts me off of it.
Yeah.
So I don't...
Well, I cannot...
really want to watch it.
I would rather watch the backside of a television than the screen that has the umbilical brothers on it.
Like, yeah.
I've got zero time for it. It's like, oh, we get it. No one, we get it. No one liked you at school.
It's like stuff that for my whole life was at the Adelaide Fringe.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, that's exactly.
It's constant.
And the thing with the umbilical brothers was they were so self-satisfied.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
And that even like rewatching through the Hey Hey, It's a Podcast, rewatching a lot of episodes of Hey Hey.
Mm.
Every time they come on, I'm like, it's time to go to the toilet. Right? Or I find myself like doing chores and stuff when they come on because it's just like, no thanks. But Lana Woodley's timeless comedy. And I hold it in such high esteem. Amazing little jokes like there's a bit where there is a dart hole in the wall and they've got their inspection. And so Frank's like, I'll just sand it out. And then it cuts away and comes back. And he sanded like the size of a basketball hole into the wall. He goes, that hole's as big as a basketball. He goes, no, it's not. Look. And gets a basketball stuck in it. You seem like real... It seems to have sucked your energy talking about Lona and Woodley.
It wasn't really my thing. Yeah. I don't know, which is weird because I love all that stupid old, you know, Aussie comedy. But that one just didn't quite click with me, I don't think.
Oh, good. Well, I think we
damn it. He is sometimes on Spicks and Specks, though, which I really love.
Yeah.
And then do you remember, like, the forerunner to that, which would have been, like, Good News Week?
Yes.
And it was horrible.
Good News Week was watered down because you had like the Late Late Show.
Yeah.
So you had like the Mick Malloy, Tony good. Martin, all those guys. And it kind of became like... then
the panel, do you remember that?
Yeah, but that then was you got good. Like the Big Gig and then you got Doug Anthony All-Stars and it just watered down more and more until it got to Good News Week. Which was, Still to this day though, I have good love for Paul McDermott. Like I'll watch something he's hosting and be like, I don't really like this, but I like Paul McDermott.
Yeah.
Charlie all in the Mirador. 5 potato, 6 potato, 7 potato, 8. Watch your space and you won't be late. Now here he is, the big cheese, Mr. Potato Head, James Sherry.
It is Dave's Video Graveyard. And yes, you did hear some hard trance music this evening. Because
Amazing.
We are talking about a show that had 4,122 episodes. It ran for 27 seasons. It finally... fell under the axe in 2020, but it now exists on something that is known as Ten Shake, which I'm assuming is one of their like
probably one of those on demand
services.
Yeah.
So, Totally Wild is a TV show for kids. It premiered in 1992. It ran on Ten Peach from 2013 to 2020, and now it's on Ten Shake. It has the format of a news program, but mostly topics such as Australian native flora and fauna, action, sports, and the environment. So it's very BTN, so it's behind the news, but about animals.
With Ranger Stacey.
I remember once we went to Canberra for a school trip, and we saw her in like one of the... They weren't filming that day, but she was in like a Questacon, I think it was called, like the science museum thing there.
Oh, yep.
And it was so amazing because we all got photos.
Wow, she was like a legit celebrity when I was in primary school, you know?
I know that one day the photos will surface and it doesn't reflect who I am as a person, but that exact same trip, we all got photos with her. We got photos with the host of Saturday Disney. I can't remember the dude's name.
Yep.
And we also got photos outside the Australian Mint with Pauline Hanson.
One you don't want. Times have changed.
I'm like, I can't remember which our group of friends' camera it was. Hopefully it's just gone forever. Hopefully you can't get cancelled for photos that were on wind-up disposable cameras. Like that should be the caveat where
it's the Wild West of social ethics.
So I can't believe this only got cancelled in 2020.
But only because of the formatting, if it's still around. But, like, even if you jump on Instagram, Ranger Stacey on Instagram, you can follow her. She's still doing a bunch of stuff.
It was Steve Irwin for kids, essentially.
It was, yeah, pretty much. And she used to always come on aggro and bring like a lizard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
A snake or a koala or something.
Yeah. For the butthole to go in aggro space. Absolute classic. One show I had to ask you about, because yep. I have no memories of it, and I found it through just researching this, was Wombat. It's the show that originated, apparently, aggro.
What?
It was a kids show called Wombat. And Agro was one of the co-hosts.
Wombat wetting my bed all the time.
Honestly, I knew nothing about
I've
Wombat.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, but well, we'll I have was to trying look to into think that.
Of as well. There was another show like Totally Wild called Something World, and it had like Pascal Fox on it. And what was that?
I remember the one you mean. I cannot think of the name of it, but it was. I can picture the two.
Yeah, I can picture a lot of it, but it's really foggy. Because that one
had a lot more intercut of US hosts.
Mm.
So it would be like Pascal Fox or someone would do the introductions, and then it would cut to two American guys out in the Sahara. Yeah,
true. Showing hey, you like.
We're here with the baby alligators.
Or like some sort of eco house that was built out of tires and old glass yes, bottles and stuff.
Earthship,
like,
an Earthship. Yeah, yeah. Which just means you don't have to wash anything.
Grand designs
for kids. Oh, what man, a time. That was Totally Wild. Is just listening to that rave remix of the song.
I wish that would come on when I was out, and then I'd probably be excited to be in a rave for 5 seconds.
You would be not the only one. So, yeah, I just can't believe it ran for so long, because I feel like it finished back when we stopped watching it, kind of. Yeah.
I feel like that with a lot of these shows, actually.
Now, the next run of films that we're going to be talking about...
TV shows.
Yes, it's quite a run of television shows, because it's kind of the format that didn't die. It just kept rebirthing in different names. So we're going to start off with The Comedy Company.
Wonderworld.
Wonderworld, yes.
It's The Comedy Company, starring Mark Mitchell, Marianne Faye, Ian McFadden, Glenn Robbins, Siobhan Duke, Kim Ginchell, Chris Keogh, Russell Gilbert, and Tim Smith.
We are talking all about The Comedy Company, an Aussie classic. It was a television series that first aired in 1988 and ran until 1990. But for the legacy that it left, you'd think it ran for a lot longer. Like some of the characters that you'd remember, Russ Gilbert played the postman.
Yep.
He was fantastic. Kylie Mull.
Yeah. Uncle Arthur, Con the Fruiterer, Colin... No. Did I say Colin Carpenter?
No.
Yeah. There's a lot. That was great. I love that show. I mean, I feel like... I was still forming as a human when that show came out, and I've like symbiotically became all these shows that started from there and just turned into Fast Forward, Full Frontal, Degeneration, all the spin-offs from that crew and onwards are the air that I breathe every day.
Pretty much. It kind of was an amalgamation of a whole heap of classic Aussie comedy. So you had like the Mavis Bramston Show, The Naked Vicar, Australia, You're Standing In It, and The Degeneration, which was Mick Malloy, and like that was Tony Martin and all
Tony
that.
Tony Martin. Yep. I think Judith Lucy may have
been. I'm pretty sure Glenn Robbins was in it. They went on to make The Castle, The Degeneration.
Classic.
Crew.
Just great people, always coming out with the goods. And yeah, from there, fast forward, something that you always say you hate, but I love, and if anyone has any footage of it, I need it. Something Stupid. And then Big Girl's Blouse, again, you say you hate it, but I loved it. Full Frontal, The Panel.
The Panel, yep.
Do you remember when things started changing and we got like The Chasers?
The Chasers?
There was like CNN and Chasers War and everything. And that was like a different breed of comedy, but it was like really good.
John Safran's Music Jamboree. John Safran's
Music Jamboree, yeah, it was great.
I was into Naked News a lot in those years.
I'm still... love staying up late to watch that.
I am still searching the internet. There was a show on the Australian Comedy Channel called Short and Curly Show.
Yeah.
It does not exist on the internet. It drives me crazy. It was two puppets that essentially hosted. I'm almost positive that Marty Sheargold was one of the voices of one. And it always was like... it was such a waste of time. It was way more effort than what was worth to come up on the screen. But they started doing the Sunday night movies on the Comedy Channel. So that's where I first saw Earth Girls Are Easy, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, all these movies I saw on the Comedy Channel back in the day, but with hosted by these puppets.
Yeah.
And the standout thing about them was they looked phallic, like their chins looked like balls.
Yeah.
And that's why they were called Short and Curly. And you look it up, and the only mention of it online is from Wikipedia when it says shows that used to be on the Comedy Channel, but you can't click on it. There's no other information.
I hate that there are some things out there that are still just only in our memories.
Pre-internet
things that there's no footprint of.
I won Abe's Oddworld on Short and Curly.
Oh, really?
And it does not exist anymore. And I know somewhere at Mum and Dad's house there's a VHS tape of it somewhere.
Yep.
If it hasn't been thrown out, which is more than likely. And because that's the one where I won, I taped it.
I'm hoping one day in your VHS purchasing that you'll strike gold and find some, like, someone's taped something on TV and it's something like that that we're never going to find.
My sister used to tape Recovery every week and then used my two VHS tapes to make, like, a compilation of the best bits.
Oh, yeah.
She had an amazing run of Aussie interviews with Silverchair where Silverchair didn't get any of the respect they were getting overseas because it'd be like Richard Wilkins be like, you still ride your bike to school. You made $15 million last year and you still ride your bike to school. Why do you do that, fatty? Like, that was the kind. That's the way they were treated. Because Australia always and always will have that tall poppy syndrome with our celebrities. Like, and I think the best sum up of it is reading story by story by INXS.
Mm.
They talk about it how they put on a big concert and they weren't getting paid to play it. They were reorganizing it. It was essentially like a proto big day out, like a big thing. And they rocked up in a limousine.
Yeah.
And every single news article about this show that they'd put on, which was like one of the best things for Australian music ever. It had some amazing, like a lineup you'd never see. Like, I think Midnight Oil played and all these things.
Yeah.
All the
just roasting music them
was like, oh, show up in your limo. God, you're from Sydney. Why did you come in? And I'm like, that is tall poppy in the perfect way. Much like when Molly Meldrum used to get the shits with an artist and then come on and be like, don't buy this album.
Be rude about him.
Do yourself a favor. Don't buy this album. So the Comedy Company, that ran until, early.
It just kept evolving, really, in a sense.
Well, in 1989, it became Fast Forward, which was Australia's highest rated and most critically awarded commercial television sketch show of all time.
One day, they're going to have to do open heart surgery on me and they're going to cut me open and instead of my heart is going to just be a VCR tape of Fast Forward.
And Steve Vizard's, like, tax returns that he's hiding. It was produced by Steve Vizard, starring Jane Turner, Gina Riley, Magnus Schabansky, Mark Downey, Michael Veitch, Peter Moon, that always still pops up in stuff every now and then.
It's never funny.
Oh, Glenn Robbins. Glenn Robbins. Brian Dore. Ernie Dingo was in one of the funniest skits ever, which is where they're going to the auctions and Ernie Dingo pretends to be the neighbor. And he's like, hey, you should buy this house because we have parties every night. You can come around. And then one of his mates bids on all of them. And so they just are buying houses for cheap.
That's great. One of the ones I love of him, it's like he's in the bush and he's rubbing a stick and you think he's trying to start a fire, he's rubbing a stick. And then it goes down and it shows you he's like rewinding a tape.
Oh, that was so good. Now, that ran until 1992. It had a good format in the sense it was very of its time, where it was just skits that weren't tied together in any way other than someone actually would fast forward or change the channel.
Yeah.
So it was made like a compilation tape.
But it was parodies of ads and then like snippets of films and things like that. So it was like you were surfing through the TV channels. Love it.
One of many of its reoccurring skits include Kung Fu, which wouldn't stand up today.
A lot of them wouldn't. A lot the of Gone with the Wind one also wouldn't stand up.
Lost in Space, The Munsters, A Current Affair. I'm pretty sure that's where we got
SBS, where she used to present the movies, the world movies.
I'm pretty sure that's where we got Ray Martin with the helmet hair.
That was Eric Banner, so that's so fast forward. I mean, full frontal.
Yep. So, yeah, it was a good time.
But they used to do Hinch. Steve Azard would do Darren Hinch.
Darren Hinch and Stan Grant, because Stan Grant took over from Darren Hinch. Man, this is the niche episode when we're talking about Stan Grant.
It really is.
So it became Full Frontal. Now, that's not just a great warning on the front of a TV show.
I used to get really excited at the video store because the spine of a movie that was called Full Frontal, and I'd see it and go, "Full," and then it was always this movie that had the name Full Frontal.
You say that. Still to this day, occasionally I'll press info, and on SBS Viceland
and you'll
it says
see that.
Full Frontal. Yep. I'm like, yes! Go over and someone called Samantha Bee has like a yep. sex show, and I'm like, I don't want this.
If it says Full Frontal, it either better be the 90s sketch show or followed by the word nudity.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's just disappointing.
It is. So Full Frontal started in 1993. So like we said, this show just kept, you know, Steve Vizard knew a good thing when he saw it. It ran until 1997. It launched the career of Eric Banner, Sean McAuliffe, Kitty Flanagan, Julia Morris, and Denise Scott. It also had a spin-off called Totally Full Frontal, which I do not remember.
It wasn't as good.
It was all a new cast.
Gabby Milgate.
Ah, right. You can still see reruns, apparently, on the Comedy Channel, which closed down last year. Did you know that?
No. Do you remember a sort of tried to revive the style of show, but they didn't do it very good, called Skit House?
I will fight you on that because I thought Skit House was hilarious.
I liked it, but it's not held in very high esteem. It was like, who's that redheaded guy?
Tom Gleason.
Yeah. A lot of him and a lot of Rebel Wilson.
That was a Roving Enterprises thing, I think. So that
and like, what's her name? Corinne Grant?
Corinne Grant. Julia Zemeckis was on it a lot. I always found it funny. There was one skit which was so close to my heart that like it became like a big thing in my family. We've always given my dad crap for tucking his shirt into his jocks when he's wearing jeans. He's always done it. When we're getting ready to go out, like we'd be going to a wedding, he'd put on all his shirt and stuff and he'd come out of like the top and he'd have the jocks with the like dress
so
shirt.
So you can
tucked
see
in.
The jocks.
Well, he'd tuck it into the jocks. Then he'd put his pants on up over the jocks.
Oh,
so they were tucked
so
in.
So that would stay
so
tucked.
They'd never come on top. And there was this skit on Skit House where Tom Gleason and one of the other comedians are playing, customs people at the airport.
Oh,
and they
yeah.
go, "Sir, please come in here." And this guy that looks almost like Glenn Robbins' Uncle Arthur, he goes, "Come in here, sir. We're going to need to search you. Can you please take your trousers down?" And he pulls his trousers down and his dress shirt's tucked into his jock. And he goes, "See, I told you they do it." And it was such... It became such a high thing, a big joke
great.
In our family. I really loved Skit House, but it was like two good seasons and then like
and then
four terrible
crap.
Ones.
Yeah. Then there was a show called The Wedge. Do you remember that?
I do, only for the fact it had the actor that went on to play Wilfred.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
He was in it and also Rebel Wilson.
Yeah, Rebel Wilson.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
like,
it's not
I
good.
Remember it lent really hard on certain skits that it thought were iconic.
That weren't
whereas
good.
A lot of the other shows that we're talking about, they would become iconic over time.
Mm.
For a while, it was like, if Magnus Szymanski's not in it, don't worry about doing it. What was her character? Michelle and Ferret.
Yeah, I love Michelle and Ferret.
I still see, living in Port Adelaide of all places, I still see remnants of that idea to this day. There was always, I think, as a kid, my favourite skit of all time was the takeoff of the sorbent ad where Magna keeps knocking on the door and finally she
and
just
explodes.
What? That is probably the best television skit of all time. They paid out all the ads that we love to put on our social medias, like the Go-Go Mobile one.
Yep.
The basketball that breaks the...
the little statue,
statue. Oh, I remember that one and it, like he's describing on the phone. Real big boobs.
Yeah.
Like, they're pink. Nah, they're boobs.
Boobs.
Yeah, Full Frontal was a wild west. But like I said, we're almost at that stage. And I hate to say, like, oh, the world we live in now. But I don't think skit shows would succeed as much as they used to because you can't go anywhere
comedy
with it.
Is on a cusp of changing in a way where people like even Sarah Silverman, people are looking back on that and going, oh, I don't know about that. But like if you can't be sort of offensive in a sense, there's a whole chapter of comedy that's then just completely disemboweled.
I think when it comes to comedy, you're leaving money on the table if you are skirting yourself to the audience. So that's why the likes of Chappelle, Ricky Gervais are going to keep thriving.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing that. Because
they're poking the bear.
Yeah, they are. Like Ricky Gervais always says, if I offend you, it's you that's offended. Yeah. I think it's funny, so I've got a better life than you.
So, yeah. I don't know. There's something to it.
So, Full Frontal gave us Eric Banner, and honestly, I would sit, because it was on Friday nights at about, it was 9:30 unless there was sports on.
Yep.
So then you had to watch, like, they'd put on the rugby footy show or whatever was on at the time. You'd have to sit through that and finally get to Full Frontal. And some weeks you'd just sit waiting for Eric Banner skit to come on, particularly Poiter.
Poiter
was my absolute favourite skit.
I was always that kid at school that was like doing the Poiter skits and all those, the class clown.
I used to, like I said, Tuesday nights I was allowed to stay up late with my mum and dad and watch Hale and Pace.
Yeah.
And I would then go and recycle the jokes.
Oh, yeah, same.
And I was considered the funniest kid in school.
Mm.
And it wasn't any of my doing. It was I just stole Hale and Pace jokes and redid them the next day.
Much like an Amy Schumer style.
And I still remember, the Dane Cook Express. I still remember this kid, Luke, that was a year older than me, started watching Hale and Pace and started, like, fact-checking me. And it was the end of a run.
Jeez.
Then I had to grow a personality after that. still trying. So, yeah, they are the skit shows all from Aussie TV. Now, Casey, you wanted to have a bit of a general chat about some of the shows because, you know, we're doing our member berry best.
Yeah.
But you said there was a few shows that needed to be mentioned because you hated them.
Yeah, like did you ever just have the family TV on and somebody would want to watch a thing or whatever and you'd just be like, I hate this show.
For me, even though it's not Aussie, just the opening intro of MASH.
Yeah,
then it was time to turn TV off.
I hate that. When you hear MASH, you just feel a bit sad.
The Aussie show for me that even though I loved the show at the time, I always had this built-in thing. Our bedtime was 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my sister used to be obsessed with A Country Practice.
Yeah.
And we were allowed to watch it in Mum and Dad's room on Mum and Dad's TV while they watched something else out in the lounge room.
Yeah.
We used to be convinced that they didn't know it was 7:30 until the final song, like the do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
So we would take turns each week turning it down when it got to that, thinking that we wouldn't have to go to bed if we muted it, realizing that Mum and Dad were just looking at the clock and going, it's 7:30, time to go to bed. So that, even though I don't hate the show, the end closing credits of A Country Practice, which was, that was probably like my introduction to like procedural dramas, like because it was a little bit of everything. It was a little bit Home and Away, All Saints, a little bit of all these classic Aussies, but it did it first. And I was so in love with Georgie Parker. I thought she was so sexy. Yeah. Then she did that TV show called Fire where she was meant to be really sexy. And we had to laugh. Do you remember reading those old TV Week magazine?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, here's the sexiest ladies of the year. And it was like, here's Georgie Parker. And I was like, oh, we had different measuring sticks back then. Or then it would be like, remember it was Catherine and, what is her name, Kennelly?
Carrie Ann
Kennelly was one of the sexiest.
Yeah, that was weird. One of the sexiest women. I'm like,
this is clearly a paid position.
One of the shows that I was going to say I really hated because my dad used to love it because he loved Katrina Roundtree, Getaway.
Oh, no, thank you.
Is really annoying.
Was Dermot Brereton on Getaway?
I have no idea. I feel like I've blocked out most of Getaway.
Because there was Getaway. And what was the other one? It was the exact same show.
The Great Outdoors.
The Great Outdoors.
A lot of Aussie
destinations. Ernie Dingo was on The Great Outdoors. And it was much better because, like, him being up in, like, the top end in, like, an almost, like, unlivable area.
Mm.
You know, with the heat and the flies, and he'd just have the nicest silk shirt you'd ever see.
Yeah.
It's like, good on you, Ernie. You're the best.
Have you ever watched the show called Black Comedy? It's a sketch show, but like Indigenous comedy.
Bits and pieces, yep.
They've done Ernie Dingo joke where they're giving out all the destinations on Great Outdoors, and they're always giving him Australia, and they're like, oh, you get to go to Paris, you get to go to Tahiti, and you're going to Alice Springs.
That's so true. I'm pretty sure Dermot Brereton was on that same show, and it was the same kind of thing where it was like, okay, who was that Miss Australia that was crazy hot?
Yeah, there was a hot chick
on there. Miss Jennifer something.
Well, I can't
she won Miss Universe when she was Aussie. Yeah. Anyway, she was on there. And they'd be like, okay, we're going to send you to, like, the third world somewhere. You're going to enjoy, like, this Thailand, like, resort.
Yep.
And then like, all right, Dermy, you're going to the Gold Coast. You're going to stay in this five-star resort. I didn't mind the travel shows. What was the one on Saturday afternoons? What, I don't think it was an Aussie show. The main guy was from the UK, and it was, I cannot think what it was called. It was on every Saturday afternoon before Gladiators, and the guy was always like, how you going, mate? We're over here and we're living in a backpackers for 6 months and we're going to go. And it was always like all over the world, but really cheap. I cannot think what it was called, but it was like a travel show.
Mm.
But you had to go live with like six other people in like a shanty town and stuff. I cannot think what the show was called.
No, I don't know.
A
lot of weekend TV I hated because it was like fishing, golf, racing. A lot of that sort of thing.
I hated all those. I still to this day.
I still don't.
The occasional Sunday afternoon, if it's about four-wheel driving.
Yeah. Or, a lot
or
of that.
Fishing. I'm just like, how much there filming did they do?
There was a show that I loved, though, The Extraordinary. That was loved always on the weekends. Because then that guy also did a show that was just long-form ads where he'd do like 3M hooks and then like that weird snatch grab shackle.
He still pops up now.
Four-wheel drive
that
cars.
Guy, I love when he does it because occasionally.
Warwick Moss.
Yes. Because when he does weight loss ones, the way he says kilo is like an alien saying it. He's like, oh, and then I lost 6 kilos. It's like, I don't think that's the right word.
That's like, you know, the footy show. There was another show that was on the weekends, like 11 o'clock on a Saturday, also called The Footy Show, but totally different show. And there was a guy on there that used to pronounce the score from this part. Instead of saying 20 and 30, he'd go 20, 25, 40. And it was really so just funny. Used to piss me off.
I hated a lot of what, like, because I'm thinking back to the time when there was one TV in our home.
Mm.
And I used to
despise. Have to share it and you'd hate.
I used to despise mum and dad time. So the news is when it would flick over because it'd be like,
I'd watch, The Simpsons is on.
I'd watch Widget the World Watcher and then The Simpsons or something.
Yeah.
But then it was like, all right, we're going to watch 7:30 Report because Simpsons was 7 to 7:30.
Yeah.
And then we'd have to watch 7:30 Report. Then we'd get into the ABC drama, which was always gritty for the sake of being on the ABC. So I was like, here's an episode of GP.
My parents weren't overly intellectual, so ours would be on, like, Home Improvement and, you know, Friends or whatever, like, the Drew Carey Show, those ones that were on at the time then. Australia's Funniest Home Videos was always on at our house, and I can't stand it. The voiceovers drive me nuts. The sound
I
effects.
I still, because I don't mind, I don't watch it every week, but I occasionally will catch an episode of The Block. I'm like, I don't mind this show. But then Shelley Croft comes up, I'm like, God, I hate Australia's Home. You know what? It was good until maybe like 98-ish when they got in that habit of dubbing over the videos.
Yeah.
Where they'd make them wacky and make like bong noises.
Boing.
And they'd be like, oh, I'm just going to climb up this ladder. Dad, hold the ladder. And then, whoop, boom. It was
insufferable. It's just people getting hit in the nuts.
Yeah, what is it?
Or grandma's falling over with... falling over. Yeah.
That's another thing I had. I absolutely despised Rove McManus when he was a TV host.
Yeah.
Because he, and I'm probably guilty of it as well. He thought he was funnier than he really was, and that was always tough to watch. And a lot of that comes across also on Hard Chat, where the ginger dude we were talking about before, Tom Gleason, sometimes he thinks he's way funnier than the jokes he's saying, and that's hard to get into. But then I also see how fans of Sean McAuliffe would love Tom Gleason's comedy. It's that dry deadpan.
It is dry deadpan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also really didn't like when my parents would put on Sale of the Century. And I'd be wanting to make jokes because that's just how I live. And they'd be telling me to shut up because they were like trying to play at home and answer all the questions.
I just thought of an Aussie show I hated. Friday nights, I wanted to watch the show Time Tracks from the US we covered. Mm-hmm. But mum and dad wanted to watch Roy and HG. And it had Frankie J. Holden was the musical guest. Or the guy that did a lot. I cannot think of his name. He was like a bargain bin Baby John Burgess. The guy with the – he had the big moustache. I cannot think of his name. But he was also one of the musical things on it. And it was so self-indulgent where it was like, this week we're going to talk to like one of the guys that was in 1927.
Was it Ian Turpie?
It was Turpie. Thank you. I could not think of his name. But I had no time for Roy and HG. It wasn't for our generation.
Well, yeah, In Melbourne Tonight.
Yes, boomer humour. Yeah, all these shows were boomer humour. Which, unfortunately, that's why a variety talk show wouldn't work anymore. Yeah, because you have to pander to that audience.
You do.
And there is such a divide from what we would find funny to what our parents would find funny, even to what teenagers find funny now. Like, there is such a divide that I don't think those kind of format shows will work ever again.
No.
Rightfully so. Well, believe it or not, that's all the time we have this week to talk all about TV classics. Don't forget, if you get the time, we've done many a special on Aussie TV.
We sure have.
You can check out the shit show specials, including one we did recently with Vulcan.
Yes.
We're looking at doing some future ones, so we're always after suggestions. We're always after five-star reviews.
Yes, everything's definitely happening. Five-star reviews.
So let us know what you think.